Steve. How are you, man?
Good, thanks. How are you, Jason?
Good. So I like to have follow-ups because people really enjoyed our interview, and I just kind of want to see what's kind of transpired since the D-League, tryout for you?
I got home and rode the wave into big radio interviews with Jason Gregor, but it was it was a pretty amazing experience to come home and then think like, well, was I actually down there and did I actually just do that? So from that end of it, it was fun. I kept communicating with the Bucks, and a lot of it hinged on what they wanted to do with their team going forward. They had not a lot of roster spots available due to who they have signed, for how long they have signed. And, I mean, that's just kind of the nature of it, too. Like, that's the interesting thing about Summer League is you bring 12 guys down there, and the Bucks have one roster spot. Mm-hmm. So from that end of it, they were really, really positive with me about what I brought and the job that I did, which is what they asked me to do. So from that end of it, it was good. And then going forward, we just kept communicating in a positive way and have still kept communicating. So hopefully that'll just continue as we go forward.
Now, they have a guy under contract in Steve Novak, who's kind of similar to you, right? He's a real good three-point shooter. That's kind of what he's done. He's at the tail end of his career, might be banged up. I'm not sure how much he'll play or not. But unlike the NFL, he can't just release guys, right? So is that kind of – you look at a guy like that and say, hey, that's the spot I thought I could have got?
Yeah, if I was to factor in with an NBA team, it would be for a spot like the one that Steve Novak has. Steve Novak's an awesome shooter, and he was a really, really gracious guy. I had a chance to work out with him when I was down there, and he shoots the ball extremely well. From that end of it, he's an established NBA guy. I know he spent some time with the Raptors. He spent some time with the Knicks. So, I mean, and also too, he's a Wisconsin guy. So it makes a lot of sense for them to have him. He's right at the end of his career. I know his role will be more of a veteran guy, which would be what I would bring to the table as well. So again, what I'm hoping for is I can continue to keep these lines of communication open with Milwaukee. And then see what happens next year. I mean, one of the things I think that stands out about professional sports is at times, you know, you're not needed until you are. And then things can change quickly. So the best thing that you can do is just handle what you handle on your end and control what you can. And then also to make sure to stay in their minds in some way, shape, or form.
Steve Sir joins us. Now, Steve, you obviously want to play. You've been playing in Europe. What's your plans for playing right now?
Well, I'm staying in shape, doing a lot of good stuff over at the base with RVH to stay sharp and stay healthy physically. And then in the gym, I'm spending a lot of time with working out with Jermaine Buckner and some of the McEwen and Concordia kids locally to stay sharp. And then, of course, with George Hoyt, who's the head coach of the Harry Ainley team, he puts me through some great shooting drills and challenges me to try to add some things to my skill set. So again, controlling what I can to stay ready. From what I've been told, a job abroad should come up in the next few weeks. And from that end of it, I'll just try and be as prepared as I can be to hit the ground running and see how we do.
Now, you've played in Europe, and there's lots of different leagues in Europe. I'm hearing that Qatar, is that a place you're considering?
Yeah, some of the discussion that I've had is about maybe trying some different markets in some places that I haven't really been exposed to in the past. And for that, I'm curious about it. One of the things that you can never say when you get involved in this stuff is, I will never do this. You have to maintain an open mind, and you have to be prepared to consider things that maybe like 24 hours before you wouldn't have been considering. So some of the stuff that's been mentioned to me has been some stuff in Asia and in the Middle East, and an area like Qatar or like the United Emirates or something like that. And from that end of it, I'm curious, because you do see a lot of guys that go over there and play, and you do see a lot of guys that go over there and play and stick. They don't leave those markets once they've gotten into them. So that's got to say something positive about it. And I know like with a lot of places, they like guys who can shoot out there. So from that end, again, keeping an open mind is probably the best thing you can do at this point.
Now, I know the NBA regular season D-League starts in November. Any thought of going there?
It's been mentioned a little bit, you know, and it's not to knock it, because I think the D-League is a much better league than I think people realize, because you're dealing with guys in a lot of cases that are like on the cusp NBA guys. So they're really physically talented. They're really skilled. They're kind of just settling into the risk of maybe not making a ton of money, but the type of money they make in the D-League is not equal the skill level that is there, if that makes any sense. Like,
yep.
The guys that they have there are not being paid the way that they probably should, but they're trying to put in the time and the work to crack an NBA roster. So from that end of it, like, if I was to be able to go and play on a team where my strengths were utilized and I had a chance to maybe showcase what I could do and maybe be in front of a couple teams, I'd definitely entertain it. I mean, being an older guy, it's a little bit tougher because you got some bills you have to pay, but you know, being associated with the NBA is always a positive thing. I mean, that's definitely something that stood out about the Summer League, is if you can be in front of NBA people, you just never know what can happen as long as you're handling your business. So, again, keeping an open mind is the most important thing going forward.
Steve Sir joins us. Now, Steve, do you know, like, what's the average guy in D-League make?
Oh, boy. I heard it was going to go up. But in the past, you know, you have different levels of contracts in the D-League. You have your A, you have your B, and you have your C contracts. The C's will be for guys that are trying to, you know, jump in and just need an opportunity. Your A contracts are going to be ones that are guys that I think are projected as, this could be an NBA guy. Now, even still, you're talking about $22,000, $24,000 a year, and that's before taxes. So it's a sacrifice from the perspective of, I'm not going to make a ton if I don't crack an NBA roster, but if I do, now I'm all of a sudden, my earning for the year goes way, way up. Because if I get a 10-day contract with the Hornets or the Bulls or something like that, a pretty standard 10-day contract is about $30,000, $35,000. So if you catch on for a month, there's your year right there. I mean, for some of these D-League guys. So, again, the money they're paid isn't equal to their skill, but it's the risk you take when you're trying to crack into the big leagues, I guess.
Yeah, and you know what? The American League, you know, hey, you can make you're 20 years old or 21, and you can make $60,000 a year. There's nothing wrong with that. Not a lot of people that are doing that. I know that AHL hockey, they definitely get a little bit more than the D League. So is a fine balance, especially when you're a veteran and you have family, and you're like, well, in Europe, you know what? I can make a lot more money and still be on the radar.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think that's changed in. I think the D-League's great from a work concept, because you have a farm system that you can keep guys in the state. So you're not talking about, well, if I want to bring this guy, then I got to pay thousands of dollars to get him here. I mean, the great thing about putting these teams in these small markets is, if I need to get a guy from Reno, I can put him on a plane. He can be there later this afternoon. Like, you do hear stories of guys in the D-League who are called up and playing in the NBA that day. So from an accessibility standpoint, it's fantastic. The great thing about basketball now being such a global game is, and the NBA teams being so long with how they can reach, if a guy can play, he can play. And if he can play enough that they intrigue him, say, hey, bring him in for a workout, or hey, bring him to summer league, let's take a closer look, they're going to do it. You're not going to look at a guy and say, I really like him, he can really play, but he plays so far away, what's the point? They'll get you there. The biggest thing you have to do is just show that, can you play? And again, from that going forward, you just have to handle what you need to handle and hope that the right eyes are watching you.
Steve Sir joins us. Now, Steve, it's, you know, there's a lot of interesting things that you take away from this situation. I know for you, it was just, you know, it was great to get in around NBA officials. And you talked to so many veteran, you know, past NBA players, current NBA players when you were down there. What was kind of maybe the best piece of advice you got? And maybe what was the thing that you heard that felt like, hey, you know what, all these years of hard work have been worth it?
Well, we had a chance to sit at a players summit meeting, and they had former players come up and present on, you know, mistakes that maybe have been made on their own, or, you know, people that they knew that affected them getting into the NBA or staying in the NBA. And one of the things that I'd always believed was, if I'm an NBA player, then my job is to be the best player that I possibly could be. If I'm a professional basketball player, then I have to be the best I can be. I'm an independent contractor whose best investment I can make is into myself, being in shape, being skilled, being healthy, all that stuff. So when we did the meeting, everybody down the line, all these former players said, what you have to do is be that guy that shows up early, puts his work in, stays late, puts his work in, gets in the training room, makes sure he's healthy, eats properly, says no to things. And it sounds easy, but it's not. Because if it was easy, then you wouldn't have these stories to warn everybody. So the thing that I've always tried to pride myself on is being there early and staying late. And when guys have asked me, like, well, how do you shoot the ball so well? It's from that stuff. It's from showing up. And even if it's just 15, 20 minutes of work, you're making sure that you're staying refined, that your feet are right, that your release is high, that your confidence is where it needs to be. And then you're staying late, too. If you finish practice, I'm getting 50 more shots, or I'm getting 100 more shots, or I'm running a couple more sprints, or I'm working on a look that I might get from a play in the game. Those little things are what keep you playing. Those little things are what keep you sharp and efficient. And it was cool to see at the highest level of the game in the world that the way that these guys operate is the extra work is what keeps you in the NBA. So it was really rewarding to hear that you've been doing it the right way, regardless of the level you've been playing at, be it the NBA or be it in Europe or abroad.
Steve Sir joins us. Amantonio is at the NBA D-League for the Milwaukee Bucks, likely going to Europe, although still has some maybe D-League aspirations this year or not. Now, I know you were also just involved with Jack Armstrong in some coaching. It's kind of a summit that just happened. And he also had some interesting advice, did he not?
He did. We had the Basketball Alberta Coaching Clinic this past weekend in Edmonton and Calgary, and we had over 130 coaches come out, and it was a really great weekend of basketball and exchanging of ideas and learning. And the Raptors analyst Jack Armstrong, who was also a former Division I coach in the States, was the keynote speaker. He was the feature guy we had, and one of the things he shared that was great was an old thing that a former NBA coach named Chuck Daly had put out on how do you define yourself as a player. And he had his measurables for how he defined players, and it was four quadrants. So the first one was pro and producer, so a guy who handles his business and gets it done on the court. Second quadrant was pro non-producer, so a guy who's great in the locker room, does all his work, but he doesn't quite get it done for you when push comes to shove. The third, and it was the biggest one and that's most common that you could find with probably any athlete or any walk of life, rather, would be non-pro producer. So guys who are just a pain, guys that maybe aren't getting it done, guys that are late, or whatever the case may be. But when the time comes, they're guys that are just making it happen on the court or whatever the frame of reference is. And then the last one is non-pro, non-producer. So guys, you just got to give the boot. So it was really interesting to hear him then say, well, if you're a player, where do you fall? And when you honestly evaluate yourself, how do you see yourself? And most importantly, does it match up with what your coach thinks? So it was a really interesting, again, really simple stuff, but again, drives home the idea that if you're putting in the time and you're putting in the effort and you are really asking of yourself the most that can be asked, you're a pro, regardless of the level you're playing at. But then, are you the guy that's also stepping on the court and making it happen? Because there are guys that will leave early. There are guys that will come late, but for some reason, they can just get it done. So if you're going to impart some advice on somebody, be a pro. And then hopefully when you get out there, you're also producing.
I love that description of and how Chuck Daly felt. There was a lot in the NBA who were non-pros, you know, guys, and I'm sure Dennis Rodman might have been one who fell into that category. Unbelievably productive on the floor, but kind of a headache at times, and you just always had to try to massage it and keep it going.
I think he was probably first in line, and it wasn't even close to a second. So one of those guys that, you're going to put him on the court. He's going to give you tons of activity on the glass, give you 12, 15, 18 rebounds, play great defense, bother the guy he's guarding. Always was on winning teams, And then how Coach Jack mentioned it was one of those guys that the rest of the 21 and a half hours of the day, you're just worried, I hope this guy's not in jail. So, yeah, I mean, it is a really interesting way to describe it. Again, very simple, but I think as we had discussed before, the simple things are really what is most unique about the highest level professional sports, because you think there are all these secrets once you get there, but it's not. It's the simple stuff that keeps the best players going. It's the simple stuff that really promotes the improvement and the entertainment of the game, because if you skip the simple stuff, then it's just going to look disorganized and unenjoyable.
Well, Steve, we look forward to following your journey, and best of luck if you go over to Qatar, man. We're going to have to talk to you, because I'm very curious to see how the basketball league is over there.
You betcha, Jason. Well, thanks so much for having me again, man.
We appreciate it. Steve, sir, unbelievable basketball player.